You're waiting. I was up late setting up test apps for all my add-ons.
So the add-ons.
So if you thought add-on maintainability was hard, wait until you have 9 different variations of other add-ons and apps inside of your...
They're in like embedded into your add-on.
They're in the source code of your repository.
What happens when there's you need to like upgrade them? Do you like CD into each one and Ember CLI update?
It's going to be someone else's problem.
Open a quest issue.
Yeah, exactly. Ed started doing this and I just... I was like, oh, that's nice. And then I asked him, I was like, doesn't this mean we have like every add-on we have, we now have to upgrade like 10 add-ons and apps just to upgrade it? And he was like, yeah, maybe. I think so. He's like, it's working well for now.
These dummy apps that you have embedded in your add-on, there's not a lot of code in them, right?
Right.
So if you...
I mean, there's as much code as there is in a brand new... That's the thing.
To get your add-on working.
I mean, a new add-on. Like, if you Ember new add-on, or Ember add-on my add-on, add-on my add-on. Like, it's going to have all of the configuration, everything that would, you know.
Like, worst case scenario is new version of Ember comes out, you delete them all,
yes,
and you create new
ones. Correct. It's almost nothing. It's the application template and then the acceptance tests. And the idea is, like, so what we're talking about, to paint some color, is you're working with an add-on like Ember CLI add-on docs, or Ember CLI Tailwind is a good example, because Tailwind is used by applications, but it's also used by add-ons to style their components, and the apps that are going to use those add-ons want to use the add-on's components, but like Tailwind is kind of an implementation detail of the add-on. Mm-hmm. But because there's so many ways that Tailwind can be used, you want to test those things. And like, what happens if Tailwind is a top-level dependency of an app? What if it's a first dependency of an add-on that I'm using in an app? What if I'm using it in an add-on's dummy app? Like, what if, you know, and go from there. So to set up, we have like scenario folders now, which have like, I'm an app with a direct dependency on Tailwind. I'm an add-on that's being used by an add-on, right? And that was some of the bugs that we had.
What does the test look like for these? Like, do you...
So the thing that Ed did, which I thought was great, is like, you know, we had some test coverage for this stuff before, but it was like using Broccoli builders and testing, like using Fixtrify to like stub out like a potential file system that looked like an add-on. And then you like test the build for like certain files or data in the files. But it was just... It was very low level, and it would break.
Like, you have to have a lot of knowledge of Broccoli.
That's a bigger problem, right? And who does? I mean, there's 2 people on Earth who could do that, write those tests well.
You're one of them,
and I'm not one of them. So, the better thing to do is like, you want to see how Ember CLI Tailwind behaves when you're using it in an add-on, and you're using another add-on that depends on that add-on. Just do that. Just set up the 2 add-ons. Make the one depend on Ember CLI Tailwind, and then. In your other add-on, just write like an acceptance test, right? Ember serve, you'll have the dummy app. The dummy app will be wired up with your dummy with your add-on that depends on the other add-on. And now you can see what the behavior is.
What does your test look like? Does your test Ember serve the dummy app?
Yes. It's just an acceptance test for an add-on. So it's using the dummy app. Because there's always an app. There's always an app in every test, like in every application test, right?
So, okay, so wait, hold on, I'm not following. Do these dummy apps that you have embedded, like in the scenarios folder, do they have their own acceptance tests?
The dummy apps, sorry, it's confusing. I'm using the phrase test app and test add-on for things like test add-on, and then the dummy app is just the normal dummy application that comes with...
Okay, so we need to distinguish. We need to distinguish these two. Okay,
exactly.
So I'm talking about the test app and test add-on. Mm-hmm. How do you, like, what does a test look like to test that, like, when I have Tailwind in a test app, I get this result?
So in our case, I was basically simulating the add-on docs case, which is I have add-on docs, which uses Tailwind, and then I have another add-on that uses add-on docs for its dummy app.
Yep.
So that's what I do. I have the 2 add-ons set up. One of them depends on Tailwind. And the other one, I want to be able to say Ember serve in there and see components provided by the nested add-on and make sure Tailwind is being incorporated in my build and those components look the way they should look if Tailwind was working right.
So is that in like before each you run Ember serve and then you...
No, it's just Ember test. That's going to be booting the dummy app and I'm going to get a dummy app that I'm going to write an acceptance test again. So I get to visit
the
slash...
The dummy app that for is
the inside top level add-on. The test add-on. The top level test add-on. So add-on docs, right?
Okay.
Add-on docs uses Tailwind. Add-on docs provides a component called Docs Hero. So I'm writing storefront and I want to use add-on docs and I want to make sure I can use Docs Hero. And Docs Hero works if the text of the hero is 36 pixels and the color is hashtag 333 or so whatever, right?
Yep.
So those are the visual expectations. The fact that they're implemented with Tailwind is a thing.
Right.
But that would be the goal. And so we have those two add-ons set up, and then I can go into my storefront add-on, run Ember test, and write acceptance tests against the dummy apps.
So in the dummy app, you use the add-on from the test support, yes. From the, what were we calling these again? Test projects.
Because it could be add-ons or apps.
So in the dummy app, you're installing the test projects.
Yes.
And then you expect that when you use those test projects in the dummy app, you get some sort of visual output.
Exactly.
Like the title of the hero or the color of the hero, yes. is black.
Is like the customized Tailwind brand color.
So you will configure it inside of the dummy app.
Exactly.
Very nice.
Yeah.
What if you need, okay, I'm going to just like try to throw a curveball here. What if you need like different versions of test apps, test projects? Mm-hmm. Or you need like different configurations of test projects. Can the dummy app of your add-on install, like change its package.json?
I would just use a new package. Oh, for the different versions is tough because right now everything under test projects, whether it's an app or an add-on, they all have their own package.jsons, right? But mm-hmm. they actually have stars by them and they delegate to the actual parent, the actual thing that you're working on. So like add-on docs or let's say Tailwind in our case. And they're going to read those dependencies so you don't have like nested node modules. It's all just top level node modules. So changing the versions there would be like changing those versions somehow. So I do that because I run this entire test suite, which kind of like CDs into each scenario file under test projects and then CDs into like sample add-on, sample app, sample add-on that depends on Tailwind. And I just run Ember test in each one of those. That's like what the test command does. And I do that once for yarn install and then once for yarn install ignore lock file.
I see.
So those are running all of those things against different versions of the node dependencies.
And then how is this different from, I know with like Ember try, you can say like, hey, test my add-ons dummy app against like Ember 3.0 and Ember data 3.0. And you can specify, you can basically Ember try.
The resolutions.
Yeah, Ember try mm-hmm. is an API for like defining what gets installed in package.json.
Right. I think you could configure it to do it. So far, I've just left the Ember try versions running against the top level typical dummy tests. So that'll be something because eventually you can get this. This could take a long time, right? But yeah, ideally you would be able to run those against versions. I think I want to talk to Katie about, I think, you know, Katie and Ed that we should be talking about this so that, cause I keep doing this and all that projects I'm working on and it's, we need to codify some of the best practices here and not get away from ourselves where it's just like, yeah, you have all these like runaway apps and sample apps and add-ons.
Yeah. There's probably a lot of overlap, but I'm sure everyone can agree on the seam or yes. the boundary.
But yeah, it worked out really well. And I had some bugs in both projects and I was like, I did a release of add-on docs and like I hadn't thought of something or anyways, I had these node tests, but they were passing, but the apps were wrong. So I was like, I just want to make it. And I went down and I went to Tailwind and made sure it would do what you expect when being used in a nested add-on and then back up and everything worked and it was great. So
that's super cool. So now you feel confident that you can change your add-on and you just know it works in all these scenarios.
Yeah, exactly. So much more confident and just to even be able to find like people are saying, how does add-on docs work with like a mono repo? How does it work when I'm documenting an in repo add-on versus an external? And now we can just set those scenarios up. And just do it. Ooh. Like we can just see what happens and work on that behavior. Or like I said, a nested. Because I had this bug in Tailwind. I was actually always going to the root. It only ever worked in the top, if like the includer was an app or it was the first level dependency of an add-on. But if it was nested dependency, because I was using this dot project instead of this dot parent or like the includer, but in the included hook of an Ember CLI add-on, you get like the thing that is that's directly depending on you. And that's what you want. Like if you think about it, you'd want that Tailwind directory is going to be like in add-on docs. And so I want Tailwind to build for that and be end up in the final build. So anyways, there's like all this stuff going on there. And now it's just so much better, so much easier to test. So yeah, it's pretty cool. Nice. I think we'll see this more. And I think, it's just like, this is the stuff that's like undocumented behavior that no one ever writes tests for. And this is just so much better. Even Mirage, like I set this up with Mirage, but there's so much behavior in Mirage that I don't have tested because it's like, what happens if you use Mirage on an add-on that's depending on another thing and how do you make it available? And now we can just like, I can set these complicated scenarios up and just try it out locally. So,
you know, what I like about this is that, you know, I brought up like Ember Try before, but this is, you're actually setting up apps on disk. So it feels a lot more, you're not like setting up configuration files.
Right.
You're setting this up as if it were the scenario. So it feels, it's a lot closer. It's a higher fidelity.
Right.
So it's super cool.
Right. And then if someone, people have worked on Mirage and like, I wanted to make it so that it can look at the data model of my add-on and then provide that to the host app. And people have like written that code. And then in the past have been like, okay, can we write some tests for this? Like, how would you do that?
Yeah.
But now you would know. You would just set it up and you would just say, does it work? Like when I run Ember Serve, and I do a store.findall for blog posts, do I get a Mirage response back? That's all you need to do.
Yeah, because you would know that the host app, yeah, cool.
So even as complex as it is, like you don't, the build pipeline, you just get to ignore all that and write these really high level tests. So I think it's going to be, we're going to see more of that going forward.
Nice. I want to see this because I'm kind of imagining it, but I think
the code helps.
Yeah, I think it would help to see it.
Cool. Let's talk about Ember Octane.
Yeah.
So what's Ember Octane?
Ember Octane is a, I got to stay on brand here. It's a marketing release that focuses on performance and productivity.
Productivity.
Okay, what is it? It's really, Ember releases every 6 weeks and we have versions like 3.0, 3.1, 3.2. And then every four versions we get an LTS. So it's like 3.4 and this is, it's kind of boring. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's pretty boring. And it's also, too, like you look back and you're like, hey, what version was contextual components? And you have to do like all this searching and it's just hard.
It's hard to keep track in your mind of what is changing over time and to talk about it because it's just like a continuous flow of like features and bug fixes and deprecations and stuff.
And I think for the like maintenance of releases, this process really helps. Mm-hmm. The just releasing every 6 weeks, having LTS releases. Mm-hmm. But from the marketing side, it's hey, have you used Ember? Have you used Ember? And someone's like, no, I haven't. It's like, oh, you should try 3.6. It's
right.
Kind of like
less than desirable.
Yeah. It's like,
sure, I'll try 3.3.
Yeah. So I think that this, the putting a name behind it will help. Mm-hmm. I really like that it ties a bunch of features to it. So mm-hmm. it's focused. Mm-hmm. This is something we talk about a lot, mm-hmm. you know, having like what's coming up in Ember and having this focus, these
not
features.
Not moving an inch in every direction for a year and feeling like people have done so much work, but it's like, what do we have? What's the user benefit, you know, the developer benefit in this case of what's all this work has gone to?
Yeah.
So yeah, this is an RFC, right? This is under Ember RFCs. So you can go and read it and we'll definitely link it in the show notes.
And it's called the roadmap RFC. So it's planning out the rest of this year. A big portion of this is going to be this Octane release.
Right. And they're calling it an addition. So why don't we just go through this? So the summary says this RFC sets the 2018 roadmap. This year's goals are to improve communication and streamline decision-making and empower new leaders. That's the first one. Second one is finish the major initiatives that we've already started. And the third one is ship a new edition, Ember Octane, focused on performance and productivity. So then we talk about the motivation here, and it says this document kind of distills the 2018 community survey. So that was the Ember.js. That was the survey from EmberConf mm-hmm. that the 201 puts on. And then we had the community hashtag Ember.js 2018 blog post. So we wrote one of those, Katie, Chris Kryko, 201, bunch of people.
There were a lot. A
lot of them.
Yep.
And those were really cool. And this is nice because, you know, the folks on Core have taken time to go over all those. And they know, you know, they talk about what's the most common piece of feedback and where people are looking for getting their needs met, you know, in Ember development. So it's really neat. Discussion on discuss and deliberation among the Core team. RFC, the goal is to align the Ember community around a set of shared achievable goals. Okay, so, right, we've got these 3 points here. I really like this, by the way. This this RFC is
yeah.
When I first read this, I was a little nervous and or skeptical just because we've had lots of ambitious goals for things that are going to change in Ember or things that people are going to work on. And the reality is, like, Ember is volunteer-led. People change jobs. People change priorities. And it's exciting to work on new things like engines or fastboot or routable components or whatever. And, you know, that's just, there's always lessons learned with that stuff. But when I opened this, I was like, oh, is it like, here we go again? But then by the time you get done with it, it's really nice. There's a really nice focus. There's a really nice, it's thoughtful and it's focused on things that are already in progress.
So I had that same feeling. I wasn't really anxious about it, but when I got to the end, I had that feeling of, this is awesome. I'm really excited about this. And I think that's what it was. There was nothing new.
Right.
I wasn't being introduced to anything. There wasn't, you know, there was no glimmer. There
using
was
no, React.
In, yeah. Using, your, using JSX. There was nothing new here. So it felt like there's a lot of the loops are being closed mm-hmm. on work that's been in progress for, I mean, some for a few months, some for years. Mm-hmm. And so that's exciting. That's super why exciting. That's why we like Ember.
Right.
So it felt like aligned with all the Ember things.
Yep. So first we want to improve communication and streamline decision-making. So this section says, there's never been more time and energy going into Ember, but we've heard loud and clear that the momentum is not as visible as it needs to be. And, you know, we talked to Tom about this, and the way he phrased it, I think last time we talked, was like, he feels like there's a lot of latent energy in the Ember community. Like, there's just lots of, there's like new interest. You're seeing new people. You know, I'm seeing new people join like the Ember NYC meetup all the time. Like, I get email notifications of people joining the NYC meetup. I'm like, who are these people? Where are they coming from? Like,
those are Russian spam bots.
So it's like, and there's, you know, there's definitely new folks we're seeing writing blog posts and doing add-ons and stuff. And it does feel like there's been a bit of a bump recently compared to like over, if you look at the last 2 years, like more recently the trend has been up. So it's kind of like, I think that's what he's talking about. Mm-hmm. And so the goal is to like make sure to take that momentum and keep it going and to share all the stuff that's being worked on because the core teams are so, you know, dispersed and working on so many different things based on their priorities at work. So they say they want to continue to expand and refine the team structure, breaking up work and delegating it to strike teams or new core teams. They want to move to discoverable communication tools, such as our discourse forum, that don't lose history and are visible search engines.
I mean, this is huge.
This is huge. Yeah. We've been both using discourse a lot more. Slack, the low barrier to adding a comment to something means that it means the signal to noise ratio is much lower than something like Discourse, where people take the time. It's a lot
easier to reply on Slack than it is to reply on Discourse.
Yeah. Yes. But the people who have something to say are going to take the time to compose a nice message in Discourse. And, it leads for, yeah, much higher signal to noise and discoverability. So it's really good.
It's also a way to hack Ed's brain. Yeah. Well, that's what I was going to say is, if anyone's skeptical of this, post a question on Slack and on Discourse and just
see what happens.
Yeah, see what happens.
That's good. Automate communication. For example, the status board, automatically pull data from GitHub. Document best practices for core teams, spreading knowledge about what works and what doesn't. Invest in mentoring, both through more contributor documentation as well as direct mentorship relationships. I mean, this is hard stuff for sure. You know, this was a big part of the focus of our EmberJS 2018 blog post was just talking about communication, because you talk to a core team member at a conference or a meetup, you hear all the stuff they're working on, and it's like, I would have loved to hear that over the last 6 months since EmberConf happened, you know?
Yeah.
So I think they heard that message loud and clear from some of the blog posts. And
there's also a thing too, it's like when you're when you're involved in the Ember community and you have friends in the Ember community, it's a lot easier to communicate, and you stay in touch.
Right.
And it's easy to know what's going on.
Right.
I think when you are, you know, you're not doing Ember 100% of the time. Maybe you're doing Ember half the time.
Right.
Or maybe you are doing Ember 100% of the time, but you just don't go to meetups.
Yeah.
You don't
watch videos or podcasts. Or, you know, there's all those things take a ton of time and people are just busy at work. And, you know.
So it's really, I mean, it's...
Everyone
it's,
is unhealthy as an obsession with this stuff with that we do.
Yeah. It's really hard to just not know what's going on. So I think that, this is for, you know... everyone on the edges.
Right.
So.
Totally. So the next, that's part two of three, finish what we started. So this year we need a strong focus on shipping. Huge improvements to Ember have either already landed or are in the pipeline. We need to cross the finish line on these before moving on to new initiatives, however important or exciting they might seem. So this, again, this is a great thing to hear. It's really great to hear.
This is the best thing.
Yeah.
This is the best thing you could hear. Seriously.
Yes. Done doesn't mean behind a feature flag on Canary. Finishing what we started means ensuring that features are discoverable on by default and that the guides and other documentation have been revised to take them into account. It means making sure they work well with the entire Ember ecosystem so that new developers get a seamless experience. Again, this is just really good because I think a lot of folks who are ninjas, who have a very deep knowledge of, you know, Ember CLI and Ember, they can get things done in their own ways.
Yeah, they can put test add-ons. Yes. They can put test apps buried within their add-ons.
Exactly. So, but the 99% of the people are going to be completely left behind. So then they say, "We're going to say something."
Yeah. So just what you just read, it reminds me of a lot of the product work that we do, right? We say that things aren't done when the code is checked in. We say things are done when it's been shipped and verified, You, as a programmer, you often think that gap is really small.
Right.
That gap is just a deploy command. But in reality, it's not.
It's much more.
Deploy, getting approval, getting client feedback. It's just there's so much that goes on there. So this feels like something a product person would say. Like, you know, done does not mean behind a feature flag. Done means it's in the build. And that's what you want to hear. It's
what you want to hear for sure. I mean, I just, again, like there's so much functionality in Ember CLI that like five people know about, and it's just the way it is. But like every time I go in there, it's so powerful. There's so much amazing stuff you can do, and it's just it's very hard to understand how to do it. And so saying like this functionality has been in Ember for 2 years, but it's not done because it's not accessible to people, it's not easy to understand, or it's not easy to use. So even if the functionality is there, it's basically like it's not there, right?
Yeah.
So yeah, I love that point for sure. It says this year we're going to ship Broccoli 2.0 and Ember CLI, as well as significant investments into Broccoli documentation, marketing, and advocacy. So Ember CLI has actually been on a fork of Broccoli. I think the original maintainer kind of stepped away from the project after Ember adopted it. And so, you know, they moved it in their own direction. But basically getting it buttoned up, getting the plugins architecture kind of consistent, and adding some docs will be really, really good because, yeah, it's super powerful. Module unification as a default file system layout. I mean, this will be great. You know, we like pods. I think half people like pods, half people use classic. So that's just a thing. You know, Ember's about conventions. It needs to have a conventional file system layout.
And I think Matt has opened an RFC about like the use helper that aligns with a lot of this. And that's a really good read. So,
yes, definitely. We can link to that as well. Yeah. Glimmer components as a default component API. So this is really great. There's a bunch of stuff here. Obviously, it's going to use all the Glimmer performance stuff that's been going on. You get the cool APIs like tracked and using just JavaScript properties. You track something and you just do this dot and this dot equals for get and set, which is awesome. And Glimmer templates are outer HTML instead of inner HTML. No more class name bindings or class names, no more attribute bindings ever. So this is awesome. Yeah. This is the kind of simplified low level primitive that like Ember needs, one way to do everything. It's really good. Really exciting.
Again, this is something we've been hearing about for a long time. We're able to use this today, but it's going to be awesome when this is just the default. I'm so excited for this.
Totally. native JavaScript classes as a default object model. It's great as well. Yep. I think it's more important for newer folks to coming in, because for me, like, yeah, I mean, we're used to it.
I don't really think about it that much. Right. There's nothing. I'm not worried that there's something I can't do with a native JavaScript class that I can't do with Ember's object model.
Right.
So I don't worry about this. But yeah, for new folks, I mean, it's just, someone sees ember.object.extend and they just cringe. Yeah. So you don't, you know, you're like embarrassed by that. Yeah. So yes, it'll be
good. Native JavaScript modules, including exposing modules in the build pipeline and allowing add-ons to integrate with tools like Parcel, Rollup, or Webpack, publishing Ember as NPM packages, and importing NPM packages into your apps. This was, they say, so this last one, the importing NPM packages, they say this was far and away the most mentioned feature request in all of the Ember.js 2018 blog posts.
And since then, there's been some work. Ed has that Ember auto import, which does this.
Yeah. And it covers so many cases. Yep. Again, look at those test apps. You know, he's got it. Because think about how hard that will become once you have auto import and a dependency of a dependency, and it's importing something from NPM that the parent has a peer. Like, it gets totally insane. But it's super stable right now. And yeah, we've used it and it's great. So having this by default will be awesome. So yeah, that's kind of the second section. What was the name of that section? Finish what we started. So we've got communication, finish what we started, and then we've got Octane. So let's talk about Octane. You know, they talked about the homepage a little bit, and that's something you and I have been working on. The way we talk about that is, like, the homepage doesn't reflect what it's like to be an Ember developer today. It makes it feel like an old framework that hasn't grown up and evolved over time and embraced new patterns. It just couldn't be further from the truth, right?
Right.
So, folks who use Ember on a day-to-day basis love it. I mean, and so we want the marketing. And
they love it so much they'll start a podcast about it.
So we want the homepage to reflect that, and Ember's kind of marketing materials to reflect that. So let's go through this. Ember releases a new stable version every 6 weeks. For existing users, this drumbeat of incremental improvement is easier to keep up with than splashy Big Bang releases. However, for people not following Ember closely, it's easy to miss the significant improvements that happen over time. As detailed in the forthcoming Ember Editions RFC, every year or so we will release a new edition of Ember, focused on a particular theme. The set of improvements related to that theme, taken together, mark a meaningful change to how people should think about Ember. In 2018, we will release the first edition of Ember called Ember Octane. Octane will focus on the themes of productivity and performance. We'll talk about how Ember excels in performance-constrained environments, particularly on mobile devices, as well as the productivity benefits of modern JavaScript features like classes, decorators, and async functions when paired with Ember's strong conventions and community. So it was pretty cool. Productivity, obviously, has always been something that we value as Ember developers, and performance has been something that's been a focus with all the Glimmer work, Glimmer VM, over the last basically 2 years, I would say. So it'll be interesting to see how those will come together in a focused message. And again, thinking about Ember in light of other things like Vue and React, and what's Ember's unique selling point. So that's going to be part of this, right? Can you say that if you care about these things, Ember is the best choice? And what is it the best choice for? And that necessarily means saying it's not the best choice for these other things. So a focus means saying no to many, many other things. So that's something I like about this. It's going to force the core team and the community to say, what is Ember's focus and when is it the best tool for the job? So that's something I'm excited about for these additions. This is also a good time for us to review the new application blueprint to ensure it's up to date with the latest Ember Octane idioms and includes the right set of add-ons to help new users achieve our goals of productivity and performance. Ember Octane is about doing more with less. Not only does this make Ember simpler to learn, it makes the framework smaller and faster too. These are some highlights of Ember Octane. No jQuery. Currently available as an optional feature, we will enable this by default.
Yeah.
So this is good. Again, like, if you were making Ember today, you wouldn't make it using jQuery.
This gives you a seat at the table.
Yeah, seat at the table. Yep. Svelte builds, where deprecated features are stripped out of framework code, will get more aggressive about deprecating code that is not widely used. You know, this, I guess tree shaking, is that the same thing as this? Dead code elimination? I think dead code elimination is like the parent.
Yeah, this sounds umbrella. Like a smaller thing where it's just if something is deprecated, you can have a build where it's not included.
Right. So I think dead code elimination in some form has been talked about for a long time. So again, like I like hearing that we'll actually get this because I think like Ember's approach, it's like the API is right where I should be able to import the component and not have like a flash that's telling me like you're including a library that is 500 kilobytes. Shame on you. Like Ember should just do that for me.
Right.
Yeah. So I like that. And it's, you know, it's, to see it being a focus and something that's we're actually going to ship this year is exciting. Native JavaScript classes perform better and require less code, integrate better with tools like TypeScript and ESLint. I mean, I like that point too, just because there is probably, I can't imagine how complex all these projects are supporting all these, you know, Tom was saying on the, I think it was actually the JavaScript Jabber podcast where he was like, the main thing Ember had to support at the beginning was like IE6. It's like hard to even think about that, but imagine how much simpler and faster the core teams could work on the framework code if it was just using JavaScript classes.
Yeah. And you know, earlier I said that I didn't really care about object model versus classes, but I also don't work on a TypeScript right. app. So I right. think if you are using TypeScript, this is a huge win for you.
Yep. That makes sense. Glimmer components offer greatly simplified API and remove common slow paths. Incremental rendering and rehydration that keeps even low-end devices responsive as the application boots. So I don't know much about incremental rendering in Glimmer, but that'll be interesting to hear more about. Rehydration probably is referring to the fast boot stuff that John was talking about, I would guess. Tree shaking to automatically remove code, so that's more unused code elimination. And eliminating the run loop from the programming model replaced by async and await and test. So that's kind of interesting because I thought the run loop is more than just tests.
Yeah. The run loop lets you batch up. Updates. I mean, any UI, any single threaded UI, whatever, if you're writing for an iPhone, not just JavaScript, anything, if you're writing in C, it's going to have a run loop because you need to batch updates. You don't want someone to click a button and have the whole screen lock up.
Mm-hmm.
So you need a way where you can batch up things, apply them. I think I remember reading something that there's going to be browser APIs that we can use here. So you can use set timeout, and then there's like another queue that happens faster than set timeout, with like the micro task. So maybe there's something here. I'm just guessing,
right. But
maybe there's something here where we can get away from ember.run. Also, like you can use async await today in Ember apps.
Yeah.
However, that if you do it inside application code, you should wrap it inside of an ember.run because that's going to get transpiled to a native promise.
Which is not run loop aware.
Mm-hmm. So that's why RSVP has a way where you can, it has like an actions thing you can hook into.
I've also seen people just monkey patch the global promise to be RSVP. Yeah, so the transpiler code uses that. Probably not what we recommend, but.
Right. But yeah, if you use async await today, you need to wrap all of your code after each await in an ember.run to ensure that it functions correctly. You know, usually you don't need to do this, right. but there are situations right. where it's unexpected. And so this is cool to see.
This is cool. Yeah, totally. I mean, yeah, we tolerate the run loop because of the benefits it gives us. It's not something that it's not like a part of the programming model that is nice to use. We tolerate it.
Yeah.
So if we could have the same benefits of using Ember without the run loop, that'd be great.
It's hard for me to imagine. Like, I think I would still want stuff that's like after render.
Yeah.
So I think there would probably still be queues.
Yeah. That you would have access to. There would still be queues somewhere in app land as an app developer.
Yeah. Because you would need to initialize something
right.
or wait for a list to render or something like that.
Right. Interesting. The final timeline and feature set of Ember Octane will be determined by the core teams that are not set in stone. In keeping with our commitment of finishing what we started, these are all features that are either finished or being implemented now. We should not plan for Octane to have any features that are not already close to being done today, so that we have adequate time to make sure they will work well together as part of a cohesive programming model. The process of releasing a new edition also gives us an opportunity to evaluate what it's like to use Ember end-to-end. We will overhaul the Ember homepage, focusing on Ember Octane and how it helps solve targeted use cases. This is also a good time to perform a holistic review of the guides, making sure that examples use the latest idioms and set new learners on a good path. Did we miss the part that said which two things we're going to focus on? Is that in this RFC? Can you scroll up?
Yeah, it is. It's kind of sprinkled all over the place. It's like performance and productivity.
But it's okay, right here. I think we missed on the detailed design. So there's the three bullet points here. This is actually at the beginning. So the three bullet points is kind of like the improved communication, finish what we started, and then ship Ember Octave. And then there's this one part that we skipped. It says, to help us deliver a polished, cohesive experience, we will focus on two end-to-end real-world use cases. Having concrete use cases in mind helps us improve our marketing as well as prioritize feature development. In 2018, our two use cases are productivity apps, and this is, they say, Ember's historical strength, sophisticated, highly interactive apps that users spend a lot of time in getting things done. I think of like You Need a Budget, YNAB, it's like a perfect example. It's an Ember app. You go in there, you do your budgeting. It's like working with an Excel-like app. And then content apps, where pages are text-heavy and where the first load is critical in performance-constrained environments, Ember's strong conventions can help developers build faster apps by default. And here I think about LinkedIn's homepage.
Yeah, this is interesting. Like the productivity apps kind of, yeah, it's like the bread and butter where we would recommend Ember.
Mm-hmm.
The content apps feels kind of new. It feels, I mean, I know LinkedIn
has right.
been an I Ember app forever, but it feels like, oh, as an Ember developer, I hear content apps and I'm like, whoa, wait, like these are a thing?
Right. So it's interesting. But yeah, I think it's also driven a lot of the like the R&D, I guess you would say, over the last couple of years, things like fast boot engines to allow code splitting, Glimmer VM to allow faster rendering. That kind of makes sense. And those are important, right? Like it's not, wait for YNAB to load because it's just loading your data. You aren't sharing a link to your budget on Twitter and everyone's going to be visiting it.
Right.
But something like Ember Map, you know, you want a video to load fast. And we want to be able to use Ember for that too because it does make you super productive.
When we got the fast boot stuff figured out, think about how much faster the website was.
Yeah.
Like just think about the experience was so much better.
Yeah. You just don't have to worry about it anymore. Yeah. It's like you just click on it and it's, oh, this thing is already rendered. So
I think getting a good end-to-end story on how to do this is important because us going through this with Ember Map, we noticed there's a lot of gaps here and it's hard. And yeah, I wouldn't like
smart teams can figure it out and they have been, but like, again, and I think it's right what he's saying, which is Ember's conventions can help developers build faster apps by default. I believe that's true. It's just not true in practice right now today.
Yes,
you know,
absolutely.
You're not going to build a faster, for a content site, a content app, you're not going to build a fast, more performant app using Ember out of the box than if you were to just use a static site generator or a Rails app.
But think about if you were building a static site and it was fast,
right?
And you could use Ember components and all the
goodies.
Yeah, Ember add-ons.
Oh yeah,
it'd be super exciting.
Oh yeah, totally, totally. Let's scroll down to the end because there's just one little section at the end. Non-goals. One of our most important goals this year is to focus on shipping. Focus means saying no to ideas we really like. So they're going to say no to major new Ember data features. We'll instead focus our efforts on stabilizing Ember data and updating it to align better with Ember Octane idioms. I like this. I mean, there's been, and again, this is not to say that there's not going to be work done on Ember data because there's been a ton of work done on Ember data lately. And we couldn't imagine building an app without Ember data, but it is like 80% of the way there. And the question is like, how can we get the last 20% to really tell a complete story?
Yeah. And I think when someone says, hey, I want Ember data to support GraphQL, you can say, that's a great idea. We're focused on this in 2018.
Yep.
We're not focused on that because we're focused on this RFC roadmap.
Yep.
So totally. That's, I mean, this is a power of non-goals. It gives you a very clear, easy way to say no.
Right.
Saying no is hard.
Yeah, totally.
Super hard to totally. Say no.
No, that's a really good point. Significant work on Glimmer.js. We'll instead focus our efforts on incorporating the lessons of Glimmer into work that enables a smaller core number. It's great. Further Glimmer VM optimizations. and then brand new language features in either Handlebars or Ember's JavaScript files. So, yeah, I think, again, it's like you just said, you just nailed it. This is going to let everyone focus on the things that matter the most. So, yeah, this is a really cool RFC. There's probably some good discussion going on in the PR itself. So if you want to check that out and see kind of where it goes, but I would imagine at this point, you know, this has probably been circulated a bunch among the core teams, and this is more or less, you know, putting out there kind of where they're at right now. And again, I'm really excited by all the things in this document. So this is really cool.
Yeah. Yes.
So Ember Octane.
Yeah.
So the last thing was that, you know, they talk about this is the roadmap for the next year, and it's the year up until the next EmberConf is kind of how they're thinking about it.
So EmberConf marks the calendar year. Yeah.
I'm trying to think of like A E C, like B E C and A E C. That's too much. Now they're really gonna say we're a cult. Yeah, I think once you hit EmberConf, then you kind of talk about, did we hit these goals? All right, let's talk about the next year. And so I think that's the idea behind this.
Yeah. I mean, EmberConf is the best...
March to March.
Right, yeah, it's the best marketing tool that we have. It's right. When you see Ember on Hacker News. Right. It's when you see Ember on Twitter.
Right.
So it's cool that... It's great that it aligns with that.
Yep. Awesome. Well, yeah. I think... go ahead and wrap the podcast for today. So again, this is really exciting. It's just nice to see people like Tom and others on the core team out in public talking about what they're thinking about. You know, and then this also gives folks who are interested in helping with the Ember project in open source, kind of some direction. And, you know, even us with our add-ons, like I'm focused on getting Mirage to 1.0, closing bugs and all the add-ons. Like, I think it's a sign of maturity to say, like, let's make these things really high quality and get rid of the bugs and not just go on to the next flashy thing, because we have a million ideas, but, like, you know, we should get things from 80 to 100%.
End to end.
End to end. Yep.
And so, you learned so much. I mean, you learned so much.
Yes. But,
so.
Yes. So, yeah, it's really cool. So, yeah, I guess that's it for this week. And I'm going to check my Travis builds and see if it's, you know, if an hour and a half was long enough to run all those test apps.
20 of them passed. You had one failure.
I know. I was trying to...
You have to restart the whole build.
I know. Something like that did happen. I was trying to feel like, can you sneak in code? And like, no, but then the SHA changes and you can't. You just can't. It's that one little typo and the SHA is different and you have to rerun everything.
It's a bummer. There's not some way you can find like a SHA collision. You can just add a bunch of garbage.
All right. Thanks a lot for joining us, and we'll see you next week.